gabangmu, burung gara hingga negara geweng wau.
Oh, what a beautiful voice. That is outstanding. It is Indigenous Round. We're looking forward to it. Andrew Webster, good morning.
G'day, boys. Hope you're going well up there in Scone.
Well, we
survive, you know. You've seen us on tour. We go, okay.
I've seen you both on tour, and I've also been up to Scone. I've also been up to Scone a couple of times, and you know, I've got very fond memories of going up there with Terry a couple of years ago for the Scone Cup Carnival. None of which I can actually remember.
we actually did make it
home from that property though, which is great. Hey, mate, Indigenous Round. It's an important round, but
it is.
It tends to get lost in all the drama we've had this week, and it was just more drama than normal.
Well, you're right, Terry. You're absolutely right. There is a bit of drama around the Indigenous Round itself. So they're playing the national anthem before every game, and then they're playing an alternative anthem, not the one we just heard. That was before the State of Origin in 2010. But they're playing an alternative anthem sung by Judith Durham of the Seekers. She penned a alternative version of the national anthem. So they're playing two versions of the anthem before the game, and that has caused quite a lot of angst behind the scenes. Not one because the national anthem offends quite a few Indigenous people, but mainly because there's two being played. So it's got the potential to politicise the Indigenous Round.
Right.
Both broadcasters said no, don't do it, NRL. They've done it anyway. I spoke to Stan Grant, the very respected broadcaster and Aboriginal activist, about it yesterday. He thinks it's madness. So I just hope the message of what Indigenous Round means and the celebration of Indigenous players doesn't get caught up in the NRL for some stupid reason having a bet each way by playing two anthems before every single match.
Mm. All right, mate. Let's look at last night's game. I think most of us would have tipped the Bulldogs, JT out of the Cowboys, but thankfully Desi didn't allow his players to play in the rep round, so they were fresh.
Oh yeah, they were real fresh. That was one of the biggest snooze fests I've ever seen last night. I listened to one of your listeners earlier, boys, Sean, who talked about not renewing his Fox Sports contract, about just switching off league. For mine, this is the issue. It is the player market system, the unregulated player market system. So when I'm sitting there watching the Bulldogs last night, you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking about next season when they have Aaron Woods and they've got Kieran Foran in that team.
Yeah.
I think there is too much. I think teams are looking. It's not the same as South Sydney, and I know clubs go through rebuilds and changing their structure of their roster. But for mine, the Bulldogs, as much as any club, you're sitting there looking at them in terms of next season. And I just think that's what the issue is at the moment in the game. We're working 3 years in advance, and I don't think that's healthy for the game.
No, that's probably a fair comment. They simply weren't good enough last night, the Bulldogs, and the Cowboys, without Jonathan Thurston, were very, very good. 5-3 there. Mate, who's running the Bulldogs? Is there a bit of tension at the
top? Well, Ray Dibb runs the Bulldogs, make that very clear. He does have a board, though, that is quite headstrong, and there's factions on that board, or members of that board, let's say, that have a very strong say. They have a very strong say in whether they think Des Hasler should be there, whether they think Kieran Foran should be there. Raylan Castle is a very highly regarded chief executive, but Ray Dibb and Nick Politis met with the Players Association at the start of this week about this collective bargaining agreement, the salary cap, about money, about what they're going to get out of the game. And Raylene works on a committee that's trying to keep everyone happy in terms of club land. So, look, I don't think the division is that bad. I think Raylene's a very, very good operator, and I think Ray Dibb is a very savvy chairman. I don't think it's going to lead to too much, but, you know, this is what keeps rugby league going, boys, this type of tension. We've had plenty of it this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's running at the moment is this drug saga. Webby, we've been asking a lot of people, whether it be players, whether it was Josh Masood. What's your take on the whole thing? We're so naive. Well, we know it's a problem, and we know it's a problem in society.
We know that.
I suppose, what can we do about it?
Michael, I've been listening to you guys all week, and you know I always find this show is the best barometer of what the fans are thinking. My issue is I don't think there is any hard and fast sort of solution to it, because if you come up with a solution to the drug problem in rugby league, can you pass it on to the rehab clinics and to the, you know, the doctors and the, you know, the emergency wards across the country?
The greater world, yes.
Because it is a massive, massive issue everywhere. You know, I don't have any moral judgment of players who make these mistakes. I think the two-strike policy is working. I think it's not a game issue, but a personal issue. I think it's a personal fault. Jesse Bromwich, put it this way, boys. Jesse Bromwich, Kiwi captain, had painkillers after the game last Friday night. Was told specifically by the Kiwi doctor, do not head out, do not have alcohol. Then he heads out. Now, can't someone tell me whose fault is that? Is it the Kiwis? Did he not get enough education? It's Jesse Bromwich's fault. He is paying a consequence for it. So I don't think, you know, all these guys who have come amiss this in the last week, including Damien Keogh, have all had there's been a cross to bear. They've all paid it. There's a price to pay, and they're paying it. So
yes.
I don't think you could probably stiffen up the two strikes policy, but boys, players are still going to make mistakes after a couple of drinks.
Yeah, they are. And I know he's very well respected, and we've chatted with him, Ian Prendergast from the Players Association, but he's I can't believe he must be living in Disneyland. He's trying to petition for less harsh penalties when after a first strike, nothing happens. And if you get done a second time, it's a 12-week ban. So he's living in fairyland if he thinks they're going to get any less the penalties when they're pretty soft anyway.
Terry, I spoke to a few clubs yesterday. I think the two-strike policy actually works. And this is the reason why. Because in the last 3 years, since 2014, since the NRL took control of illicit drug testing, only three players have had a second strike. So that says that after the first strike, they're going, you know what, we're not going to be the 12-match guy. We're not going to be Ben Barber.
Yeah, right.
We're not going to be Kirasim Avar. I think there's some clubs, though, would like to see a player named after the first strike, because if you sign them to a third party, you don't know that he's on a first strike. So there could be a bit of tinkering there, but I honestly think the second strike policy is working.
Good on you, Webby. Fantastic, mate.
Thanks, boys. Enjoy your day.